On today's episode of Back of the Bird, we sit down with High Point head coach John Torpy. We chat about his playing career, his time around the NLL, and his time coaching Dan and the rest of the beauties down there at High Point. Also have a great airport escalator story from Paul and catch up on some news and notes around the league. Let's get into it. Episode 105 of Back of the Bird.
Take your first ride and run, baby, run. If you want a sign, this is it. You're mad, your magic, you're as hot as a gun. You want to play with fire, consider this. You'll chase the thrill if it's worth the hit, cause you never ever want to work for it. Take your first ride and run, baby, run. You got a spine of steel and a roar of thunder.
All right, we're back. Old school zooming it. No Donnie, no producer. We're in shambles. Episode 105, Back of the Bird, brought to you by Cottage Springs. Get out there, get your springs. Just launched it. Raspberry lemonade vodka. That we're not directly competing with anybody or anything, but get out there and give it a try. I haven't had it yet, but apparently it's pretty good. But let's get into it. Paulie, what's going on with you?
Nothing, buddy. Nothing really, man. Just grinding away. A couple days of work this week, some kids, you know, just grinding.
Doing it all.
Had a nice little mandate yesterday at Burlington Mall. Some ice cream. We took one of those ride along like things.
Yeah.
It was hilarious though, because like go up there, I just was gonna let Mac do it. So I'm like pretty sure I can just like ride along with him.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, like how old is he? So I like lied. I was like, oh, he's three. She's like, usually like the parent goes on with him. I'm like, okay. She's like, there's a 230-pound weight limit though. I'm like, okay. She's like, all right, so you're gonna ride on it? I'm like, yeah, I guess so. Like, so it's just 260 on there, but we're just buzzing around. It was awesome though. Thing goes about 2 miles per hour, but it's pretty sweet.
Yeah. Still a good day though. Do you get anything?
No. So I had to like, I had to return. So we go to like Fairview first, had to return some stuff at Lulu. Actually all time play here by Lulu. So I ordered some stuff on Black Friday.
Yeah.
Doesn't come. And I like wait a couple weeks. I'm like, man, stuff still doesn't come. Cause I was like traveling to Denver. So I just call him. I'm like, hey, like I haven't got this stuff yet. Like, and then it said it was still in like Vancouver. It hasn't even shipped. And then the guy's like, okay. If we give you like a gift certificate where you paid, would that like, or do you just want to like your money back? I was like, yeah, let's take my money back. He's okay. Like, sounds good. So still got the stuff, money back. Just return the stuff. I didn't even like clue in, but I returned the stuff because like the shirts actually didn't fit. And then I just got money back for it. So it just like double dipped. Yeah. So like, I didn't even have clue until I left. I was like, man, I didn't even pay for this stuff. I just got a nice little gift card, so I was like, this is unreal.
That's fantastic. Their customer service is really good.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, like sweat off a duck's back, like, or water off a duck's back, doesn't matter to them. But then so we're leaving, Dory's like, oh, they got those ride along things at Fairview. So I like go to the customer service. I'm like, hey, can I get one of those riding things? Chick just brings out a stroller. She's like, this? I'm like, no. And then Max like, he wanted to, like, he like went on those rides. There's also like the coin rides. So he's like, Wii U, I want to go on the Wii U. So I'm like, okay, we'll go to Burlington Mall. And yeah, just buzz around there for a bit. So good little day.
That's awesome.
How about you, bud?
Yeah, same old, just chipping away here. Weeks.
One funny story from ride home at Denver last week. So we're going we always go to the United Lounge in the Denver airport. So like really nice lounges. So you check in and then you got to go up escalators.
Yeah.
So like a couple guys go first and there's like a lady in front of me. And then I'm waiting to check in. And then all of a sudden there's like a huge commotion. Lady just goes ass over tea kettle backwards, falls down the escalator. So like, yeah, like employees are freaking out. They press the emergency stops. So I'm like, I'll go check on her. go up, like I walk up like the non-moving escalator stairs. I'm like, hey, you okay? She's like, yeah, yeah, I'm embarrassed. I'm like, you sure? Like, you didn't hit your head? Because those things are like hard. And I like kind of started falling. She did like three tumbles and she was screaming and stuff. So she said she was fine. She's embarrassed, but it was an all time. And then like you see like the guys in front of people like, help her. Like, they're like, what do you want me to do? She's like falling back. Yeah,
you can't do anything.
Yeah. So it was an all time movement. Pretty funny after it was all said and done. After she was like, okay, I like walked up the stairs and just started howling, laughing.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I gotten really nothing other than tough drive home through the, the snowstorm there. I guess cause like you really couldn't leave the, like Saturday night, like cause the highways. Yeah.
Did you leave Sunday or you left Saturday?
Sunday. So it was, it was a bit sketchy.
Man, I've done one of those white knuckle drives into Roch, like literally no lines, like white out. So, and it was like, that was the most terrifying drive I've ever had.
Yeah. Like, I remember we had one that was pretty bad on the way to Roch.
And might have been the one.
Like, don't look at the car side. You don't look at the car side. This truck's going to fold us. Like,
yeah.
We got through it. But yeah, other than that, I mean, not a ton going on. Just
more it's tough week. It's tough week to week now, man. Again, it's just lacrosse, working out.
Yeah,
recovering, then getting ready. Like,
and we're getting folded by bye weeks here. We got another one this weekend.
Yeah, we're on a heavy stretch now. We're like 10 weeks in a row. So it's our last home game, then we hit the road for four. So
okay,
but yeah, we're not off till March now. Oh, guess who's going to Los Cabos now too for free? Let's go!
Come on.
Let's go! Dory hit her numbers. Going
to Los Cabos. Let's go! That's awesome. This guy just keeps winning. It's unbelievable.
Coming up roses, yeah.
Is that a full family trip or just you two?
No, just us two again. So it's good because it actually works out perfect. We got a Friday game and it's Sunday to Thursday. So I just got to figure out how to get from Mexico back to Denver.
Nothing crazy.
No, but I mean, you got to assume there's a flight from Los Cabos to Denver.
Yeah.
It's kind of like straight up, but yeah, so it actually worked out perfectly. So I'll be able to go on the company's dime, but yeah, it's just like it's all the people that hit their numbers, though. So it's like all work people, so it'll be fun. Like, I'm sure she'll have some stuff to do, probably hit the lens. Hopefully, we'll see.
Right. I would love to see that, but
I'm not gonna tell her, and bring my clubs and just
how'd these get here?
Yeah, exactly. Pull them out as we get to the airport.
That's awesome. Do you have a good like carrying case? I need to get one of those.
Yeah, it's okay. We were going somewhere and I just bought one off Amazon. It's okay. I mean, the clubs have come back now on like 3-4 trips, not damaged. So it's good. It's pretty pad. It's not hard, but it's like a soft cover one. And I just pack around my clubs.
Yeah. Do you have a stick in there?
Yeah, and I have that like umbrella too. And then I just pack where like I put like socks, extra clothes like around the club. So seems to do the trick.
You know what you're doing. Not your first row.
No.
Well, that's good, man. We're not gonna go through the scores from the past week because Donnie's not here. That's Donnie's
gig.
Yeah. Donnie's flying out to Denver where you are right now. So
yeah.
But this week we got a good one. Not just because he pumps my tires full of air. But John Torpy came on, joined us, and really, really fun one, actually. Kind of an interesting look into a bunch of different things.
No, it was great, man. I thought he was pretty, like, candid, too. You never know, like, with coaches who are currently coaching, like, how candid they're going to be. But he was pretty, like, he was pretty open about everything, man. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, it was a lot of fun. He was, he went silent when I talked about my little recruiting trip and he doesn't want to take credit for that, but it was an interesting one. So I think maybe we just throw it right to it. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So brought to you by Lucky Penny Media. At Lucky Penny Media, we're a full service marketing company without hefty agency pricing. We understand your brand is everything to you, and working together, it means everything to us. You're more than just a client, you're a partner and a teammate. Our philosophy is simple. You grow, I grow, we grow. So here he is, Coach John Torpy. All right. We are pleased to welcome our next guest. This Baltimore native played his college lacrosse at The Ohio State University, where he's a 3-year captain and All-American his senior year.
He would make stops in the NLL with the Philadelphia Wings, the Colorado Mammoth, and the Columbus Land Sharks, winning a title with the Mammoth in 2006. In the MLL, he played for the Philly Barrage and the Denver Outlaws. He's been the head coach of the best school in the country since the program's inception in 2010. Welcome back to the Bird, head coach of High Point University, John Torpy. What's going on, Torp? How are you doing?
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited.
Awesome, man. Well, what's the latest and greatest? How's life right now?
Life's good. The guys got back last Saturday. We did a little two-day retreat down in Charlotte. And we had a full week of practice. And this weekend, it was actually pretty cool. We scrimmaged Team Jamaica. One of our alums, Isaac Newland, is on that team, played in the 2023 World Games with those guys. And it was just a great run. We had those guys stay in the dorms with our guys. They got to know them pretty well. And then played them on Saturday afternoon and back to practice again this morning. So looking forward to a great scrimmage. We've got Denver and Navy coming up this weekend in Annapolis, and then we open up on the 3rd of February against Mercer at home.
Did you guys do anything with the team? Like, I know kind of when I played for Team Canada, like when you play like those kind of up-and-coming programs, you try some tricks of the trade. Were you doing any of that, or was it just like strict scrimmage?
Yeah, it was actually really cool. So those guys kind of came in from all over the place. We had guys coming from Jamaica. We had guys coming from different colleges, all up and down the Eastern Seaboard. Had a couple guys flying for the game. And so we met up with them on Friday night, had dinner with the guys that were able to come in. And then, like I said, they stayed in the dorms. And then we had breakfast with them the next morning. I got a chance to talk to their coach, Mark Wilson, who's a phenomenal guy. And then after the game, we kind of just, got together, took a picture, had all of our guys kind of chat with their guys. And then we had Isaac, who played for us, come up into the locker room and just talk about his experience at High Point. It was just, all in all, like a really cool weekend. And for that being our first week back, it was great to, see another jersey. And we've never really done it that early before. So, and they're competitive. They've got some really good guys, and they've got, a good mix of older guys and younger guys. And there was a lot of guys in their player pool that they're looking and evaluating for the next World Game. So just all in all, awesome, awesome experience.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. How did that all come together? Was it just kind of an idea that you and Isaac had talked about? Or
so I don't know if you guys know this, but the NCAA only allows you to play 17 competition dates. And that's, you can save those all to the spring. You can have a scrimmage in the fall. You can do another scrimmage in the spring. You can kind of divvy it up whichever way you want. We try to maximize all of our dates. We try to play all 17. So for us, the only thing that you have that's not actually considered an NCAA tournament or NCAA competition date is an international game. And we've never been fortunate enough to play the U.S. or Canada. Those guys are on high demand. It's tough to get those guys on the schedule. So, Isaac and I just had an idea. We're like, what if we just played each other? We didn't use up the competition date, which was fantastic, but it gave our guys another opportunity to just play. So it kind of came about, I'd say, about 2 months ago. There was a lot of moving parts just because their team was coming from all over the place. And it was just, again, great to see them. We actually, had a little fun with our freshmen last weekend. We told them that we had to move the game to Kingstown, Jamaica, and we were going to take a charter flight down there. So they got all excited. pulled the rug out from under him and told him that actually home. So
that's funny. That's
just that sounds kidding. Awful. You guys got suicides instead.
That's a good kind of transition by Paulie there. How did the boys show up ready to go? Were they ready to rock for the winter conditioning test there?
They were. I mean, they were all business. It's like you guys, man, they're just professionals. They did a great job. They came back ready to roll, and it makes our life so much easier when we don't have to waste time, doing those menial things. They're just ready to play when they get back. And this group is, you're seeing this now everywhere in Division I lacrosse. So many schools have retained their fifth-year seniors or brought in fifth-year transfers, and there's so many seasoned vets that just don't allow the younger guys to get away with things that you might have seen in years past. So just having those guys around, just having some veteran leadership, those guys have done such a great job of keeping these guys in check.
Yeah, that's funny that we were actually
– I was going
to – Yeah, go ahead, Paulie.
No, I was just going to ask, you being there since the beginning, so this is like 13 years or 14 years in the program, Have you kind of noticed that? Like, I'm like, from my point of view, like even playing in the NLL and stuff, like guys being more ready to play and more athletic and being in shape. Like, has that been something you've seen too? Like, as players, like instead of guys coming in, getting in shape, like guys are coming in like ready to go and staying in shape, or is that still like a work in progress for like kids coming in? Or
I think for guys, it's a great question. For guys coming in, it's a little bit of a learning curve. But for, you know, the guys that are here, there's just so much research that we've shared with the guys and so many different things that we've done from a recovery standpoint and just the different things we do to get these guys ready, strength and conditioning wise, and the information that we're able to get them and the rate that we're able to like share information with them, that you find a lot of guys stay in shape. You know, they take a lot of pride in making sure they take care of their bodies, they're putting the right fuel in their bodies. And you don't have as many, you know, issues as you had in the past. You're always going to have those one or two passengers that just kind of like go along for the ride. But, you know, for us, we've done a really good job of weeding those guys out. Usually the players do that. And we haven't really had any major issues with guys, you know, not coming back ready to go. And if they do, you know, the culture is established enough here now that if a guy were to test the waters and do that, there'd be a wrap that would come down on them, more so from the players than the coaches at this point. So definitely a shift. You know, I think the days of like, I'm going to use practice as a way to get in shape, you know, probably in the NLL and the PLL and with us, I think those days are gone for the majority of guys that really care about this thing.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, you talked about it, but that, even that change in culture from the players kind of demanding more, I think that's something that you push on guys too, right? I mean, at least I remember the early days, and we'll get into it, but, you know, having that class that was ahead of us when the program started, and then as soon as you get there, like, I can remember practices where, you know, guys that were kind of half in and couldn't do their burpees when everybody else was doing their burpees, like, just screaming at them to leave. And, like, there was four or five guys that, like, we legitimately convinced to, A, quit the team, and B, transfer from the school. So it's one of those things, like if you're not ready, or don't want it, or don't have, I mean, obviously there's a level of kind of grace period, right, where there is going to be a transition. But yeah, like you said, there was some pretty ruthless times. But again, it's, everyone's there and you put so much time into it, you want everybody to be, you know, committed at 100%. But those are some of my favorite memories. I think just pouring rain, screaming, like, get out of here. And in a slightly more mean way, telling guys to get out of there. But,
well, I think like every coach's goal, you know, is to, and we talked about this, you know, since you were here, man, it's like every coach's goal is to have a player driven team. I mean, we're only with these guys, if we're fortunate enough, for 2 to 2.5 hours a day. You know, the social decisions, the academic decisions, the work the guys put in, how much guys care, you know, it's got to come from the players, you know. And so for us, that the first couple of years you were here, you know, we didn't have upperclassmen. We didn't have guys to kind of show you the way. And so our staff made it, you know, such a point to instill all these values and cultures and all these different things that we wanted to see kind of be sustainable over the years. And it's got to the point now where all the work that you guys put in, the original guys and you guys and all those guys that built those first, you know, 4 or 5 years of the program, handed it off in such an amazing way to the guys that are here now, that your fingerprints are still all over this thing. And I think that's the coolest thing in the world. When people, you know, when I see you guys at weddings or we catch up over the phone, and you say, you know, what are the guys like now? We've never compromised our morals to bring in a recruit that was going to pull this thing in the wrong direction. And by doing that, we've been able to bring in great guy after great guy after great guy. And those original personalities and those original work ethics and those amazing guys we brought in early, you know, just that tradition continues today. So, you know, I feel like this thing's going to be more of like a pump up Dan Lomas victory lap than anything else today. So I'll try not to do too much.
If I have anything to say about it, it surely will be.
Well, that was going to be my next question. How long did it take Daniel P. Lomas to buy in, and how hard did you have to get after him? Because when he was younger, he was known as Fat Dan. I don't know how he came into High Point, but I'd like to know him coming in as a freshman, what he was like.
He was awesome, man. I mean, I can't say a negative word about this guy. And I'd love to bust his balls, and I'm sure we'll get to some stories here. But I always said, man, when your best player is your hardest worker and your best leader, your team's going to follow that. And we were just so lucky early on. We had, you know, one of my assistants, Pat Tracy, had gone up to Canada. I said, listen, man, I just left the program at Dartmouth and the University of Denver, and mostly Denver, which was built around lefty inside finisher Canadian player. And we had so many Canadian guys when I was at Denver. Some guys I'm sure you guys played with, some guys that were before your guys' time, that just were, you know, like generational type talent level guys. And we said, man, if we can build a team around these guys, we're going to be in good shape. So the first Canadian we had to bring into the program had to be someone that could, you know, carry the torch of a guy like, you know, Mark Matthews or Matt Brown or some of these guys that we had coached at Denver. And we went up to Canada and you know, Pat found Dan and came back and he goes, I think we found our guy. And we brought him down for a visit and fell in love with the kid and fell in love with his parents and just said, okay, this is going to be the cornerstone. This is what we're going to build our program around. And he took a great amount of pride in that and, you know, would never allow the standard for guys we had coming in here be anything less than somebody that's going to bring us in the direction of a championship. So I owe a great amount of what this program is now and, you know, who I am as a coach and what our guys look like in the locker room too, Dan. So no fat Dan when he got to High Point, man. He was borderline six pack, I think. He was a good looking dude. Flowing locks, all that good stuff. Hey,
little more hair probably up top, but six pack, little more hair. But I was just going to say, Coach, I don't know if you know how old I am, but not many players you've probably coached have come before me. I've been around for a long time.
We can rattle some off, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, and I mean, I'll touch on it too. And this is something I was going to kind of get to, but my recruiting visit, man, this guy, let me tell you. So I feel bad as a certain like upstate D1 program I'd visited like the week before, kind of driving through, right? No one was on campus. It was like a gloomy day. The school was made of concrete. Like it was just a tough day for anybody. But then the next weekend, and I was like, you know what? I'm really interested in going here. I haven't talked to anybody else. Next weekend, I go down to High Point and like, I'm like, okay, like those poor guys in upstate New York, like this is just not the same thing. I get on campus, meet Torp, kind of do this. He's like, yeah, we've set up a tour for you. I'm like, okay, sweet. And whatever. We drive over to the student center. I get in this golf cart and they're like, yeah, like we're going to take you around campus and you get to kind of see everywhere. And they're going to have a student tour me. And this student that walks out is just like still the one that got away. I think blonde hair, blue eyed. She sits down. She's like, yeah, we're going to get, I'm sitting there like just wearing a teal polo, trying to look like a cool dude with my hair in a faux hawk, like ready to see the place. And they just walked this supermodel out. So I think from then on, it was a lock. I wasn't going anywhere else.
That's classic.
But it was, it was good times. But listen, we're going to try to rewind the clock a bit here. Let's go back for you, kind of walk through everything. How did you, growing up in Baltimore, how did you get into the game? How did you pick up a stick?
So I was born in Buffalo. So right now I'd love to be watching the Bills, but I'm excited to talk to you guys too. And then we moved to Baltimore when I was a little baby. And so we moved into this hotbed of lacrosse. And my parents, my mother was from New York City. My father was from Jersey City. They didn't know much about the game. I found out much later that my Uncle Billy had played at Holy Cross, but I didn't know that at the time. And, you know, I just one day just kind of saw it and I was like, God, this looks really cool. I'd love to try this out. And my neighbor that lived in the downstairs apartment from mine played at Loyola High School. And he had a stick and you know, I got a chance to like pick it up one day and throw the ball. And I said, man, I'd love to get a lacrosse stick. And so I remember asking my great grandmother, who was like straight off the boat from Germany. I was like, you know, Mutti, would you buy me a lacrosse stick? And she, you know, palms me to $20 thinking that that's going to be enough. But it was about half of what the thing cost. And I had said it to my parents. I'm like, I want a stick. And both of my parents worked at a mental hospital. All right. So this is my introduction to the sport. One day, one of my father's patients was like beating someone with the stick. And so he brings home this orange Sam lacrosse stick and he goes, here, you wanted a stick? There you go. There's your stick. And he, you know, gets a ball from the downstairs neighbor. The thing was literally like, you know, you talk about like these like, tiny ball balls. This thing literally looked like a glass eye. I mean, it was rolling straight off the top of the stick. And I would take that thing, and we had an apartment building that we live in. There was one right next door to us, and I just play catch all day long. And it got to the point where, you know, growing up in Baltimore, I finally talked my parents into letting me play football, contact sport, and play lacrosse. And just fell in love with the game. And from there, went to Calvert Hall, which is a lacrosse powerhouse, and, you know, had to earn my way onto the varsity. Was fortunate to go to Ohio State, played there for 4 years, and you know, got a chance to really see that program kind of come up from nowhere to this, you know, fantastic program that it is now. And then just by chance, I didn't even know, you know, that they were going to have a team in Columbus. And they had the Columbus Land Sharks, and they were looking for local guys to play on the team. You can't say the Columbus Land Sharks without smiling.
It's an all-time name.
It really was. And they had, you know, said they reached out to a couple guys that were on the team. They said, hey, we might end up drafting you. And I was like, what? There's a draft? Like, what the hell is going on here? And end up getting like picked up in like the, I don't even know, like sixth or seventh round. And they reached out to me. It was like a courtesy, like, hey, you want to come try out? We're trying out in Erie, Pennsylvania, blah, blah, blah. I was like, sure. So I go there, and just like thinking that I know what I'm doing, just got so humbled by this thing, how the speed of the game, the physicality of the game, you know, me and all the other Americans walk in with shoulder pads and, you know, back rack helmets and, you know, gloves and no arm pads and anything. And these Canadian guys are just physically, mentally, and emotionally just beating the, you know what, out of us. And, it was just this, it was such a fun weekend, you know, it was such a good time at this training camp, fell in love with the game, you know, and just, had such a joy playing it, and was fortunate enough to be put on the practice roster. And then my life was this series of like, all right, you're on the practice roster. All right, you're on the active roster. You're going to get paid in both the, you know, the NLL and the MLL. And I never really caught the wave. You know, being a college coach, it was hard to be a guy who was playing, or a guy who was, you know, able to stay in one place and stick it out. But I just loved it so much. And during that time, too, I started coaching as well. And I was coaching at Denison right out of college, and then got to go to Goucher College, get my master's degree there for 3 years. Went to Denver for 5 years, went to Dartmouth for two, and have been at High Point for the last 14. So this game's given me so much, man. It's introduced me to my wife. It's introduced me to my best friends. It's given me the opportunity to, you know, coach some of the greatest guys in the world. And I can't say enough good things about this journey that I've been on.
It's unbelievable. You just basically walk through our entire show notes and knows it like the back of his hand. But I kind of get into maybe just a little bit of recruiting for you. Kind of like, how did you land on Ohio State? How did you pick to go there?
Yeah, so I had like looked at a bunch of different places, and it was really like my sophomore year in high school. I had a great coach, this Hall of Fame coach, Michael Thomas, and he's a legend back in Baltimore. And I was just kind of, you know, a dumbass, you know, sophomore in high school, wasn't getting good grades, was kind of, you know, getting into trouble, doing all these different things. And he just pulled me in his office one day and he goes, hey man, like, if you actually care about this thing and you work your ass off, you could have the opportunity to play Division I lacrosse. And so back then he would come in, this guy was a legend. He'd come in and he'd hand you a binder that had every coach in Division I, you know, who had ever reached out about a Calvert Hall kid. And he said, reach out to all these schools. You can take about 15 of them out because of your grades. And he said, you know, just dive in, man, and see, you know, see if anybody's interested. And so I did that, ended up getting, you know, pretty much contacts back from everybody. And, you know, from there, really, like, you know, kind of wanted to stay on the East Coast. But I also wanted like a bigger school because my brother was at Penn State. And there weren't a lot of options. And so for me, it boiled down to like Hofstra, went out to Notre Dame, had taken a look at Towson, you know, a couple local schools, got reached out to by a couple others, went to like Bucknell. And I really liked Hofstra because my family was from, you know, New York and Jersey City. So I was like, man, that'd be cool to like be back where all my relatives are. And found out what the price tag was. And my parents said, we're not sending you to Hofstra. And then, was, you know, looking at Towson, and I said, I don't know if I want to be this close to home. And then Ohio State kind of popped out of nowhere. I end up going there during the blizzard in 96, get stuck there for 7 days on my trip with a friend of mine who will stay nameless on this podcast, who packed for 1 day of ADHD medication, not seven. They put us in a hotel room together. We almost killed each other. And by the end of the trip, I was like, there is no way I'm coming to this place. Like, I can't do it. And so, you know, I was like, man, I hope Notre Dame works out. Notre Dame doesn't end up working out. And I just go to my father. It's just like all happenstance, right? I go to my father one day. I was like, you got to see these facilities. They got an indoor football field. You know, the shoe is amazing. Like the locker rooms, all this stuff. It was just such first class. And so my dad's like me. He's like, he's a little kid. He's like, let's go, man. Let's go out there. My mom's like, I'm going with you. So we're like, all right. And about a week earlier, the coach had come over our house for St. Patrick's Day, and it was a big holiday in my family. And you know, he's over there hanging out and saying all the things you want a coach to say. I'll take care of your son. I'll make sure he does what he needs to do academically. We'll help him get a great job. And so my mom falls in love with this guy. So we go out there. We take the trip. I have no intention whatsoever to commit to Ohio State. And they brought in like all these recruits this weekend, and the coach ends up pulling me aside. He goes, what do you think? And my mom turns to me. She goes, I didn't drive 6.5 hours to see some indoor football field, make a decision. And I'm like, oh my God, I got to make a decision right now. So I go, I guess I'm coming to Ohio State. And that was, you know, I always say my mom was one of the best decisions I never made. And so that was my decision to go to Ohio State. And I thought about it. It was an interesting time because the coach ended up leaving after my freshman year. Thought about transferring, you know, stuck it out, and ended up being just a godsend that I did that, because everything in my life and trajectory would have probably been, you know, a lot different if I wouldn't have stayed there. So very, very lucky.
That's awesome, man. We'll kind of jump back just into some NLL stuff. So obviously, you know, that 2006 team must have been a pretty good one. Who would have been on that team with you in Colorado?
All right, you had – well, it was cool because the 2005 team was loaded, all right? That was Gary Gates last year. I don't know if you guys remember this, but they brought back Paul to play with Gary. It was like kind of the final hurrah victory lap. And it was – you know, Paul was definitely like – I think at times he was like, I don't even want to be doing this, man. He's like, I'm out of shape. He's like, I'm not where I need to be right now. But that team was really good, but it was – there was a lot. I always looked at that. I said, when you're playing with Gary Gate, he's so good and he's such a monumental figure that everybody would just kind of stand around and watch him at times. You know, they would just be like enamored with the fact that they were on the floor with the guy. And then the next year he ended up becoming the head coach of the Mammoth. And you had Gavin Prout, Brian Langtree, you had like Jamie Hanford, you had Pat Coyle, you had, my God, man, try to think, I think I said J.J. Albert already. You had like Dave Stilley. It was just a really good, like veteran, like led group of guys. And, the ball was definitely moving from side to side, you know, everybody was getting involved. And I think, you know, it was really cool to see the team go from, you know, the kind of the Gary Gates show, which rightfully it should have been, to like all five guys on the offense were now touching the ball and being a part of it. And it just put so much pressure on defenses. And then the defense was, it was a cool mix of like American guys and Canadian guys. And just like anything, man, the stars aligned that year. And I wasn't even fortunate enough to be at the championship game because we were playing in the first round NCAA tournament game at the University of Denver. And it was at that point, you know, probably the year before, I figured, you know, I got to go all in on college lacrosse. I can't be doing this as much as I was, but was fortunate enough to be active roster the year before, and then played practice squad, had some injuries that year, but it was still an awesome journey.
Moving into your time at Denver, obviously you said you had a bunch of Canadians. You were there for 5 years, is that right?
Was, yep.
Okay, so what was that time like? Who were some kind of guys that you got to know from the Canadian side of things while you were coaching there?
Well, I got to know, it's funny, a lot of the relationships I still have with guys that, you know, are kind of our like eyes and ears with the Canadians, or guys that played for us, obviously like you and Connor and all these other guys, but it's also guys that I was fortunate enough to play with or even against. I mean, this past year, you know, I had never played with Colin Doyle, but he's got the, you know, Toronto Rock organization, the club program that he's doing up there. And he was great in terms of helping us get another kid. And there's always that connection. And then Tracy Kaluski has been, you know, fantastic in terms of his, you know, connections up there and all the things that he does with the Evolve program and Brody Merrill, all these guys. So the Denver guys, you know, have always been great, you know, and you know, Jamie Monroe, who was the head coach there, did such a good job of just diving into Canadians. I mean, it seemed like every kid that played at Burnaby went to Denver for like a 10-year stretch when they were winning the Minto. And then we started to really delve into, you know, Eastern Canada, going after guys in, you know, Toronto area and beyond. And, you know, those guys, there's something about Canadians I just love. I mean, they're just really, really good people. And they've always been incredibly honest with us about, you know, what we need. You know, we tell them kind of what we need. They'll give us a list of guys, you know, whether it's Troy Cordingley, like I said, Tracy, whether it's Brody, whether it's Connor, you know, or anybody. I mean, all these guys become great resources for us. And because geographically we're a little challenged where we can't see those guys at the rate we might be able to see some guys from the States, those relationships with guys where, you know, they're sharing information with us and being honest with us, it's gold, honestly.
No doubt. And I know for you, a lot of kind of your recruiting and things like that have started to, you know, get that focus in terms of kind of seeing more Canadians and obviously going, you know, kind of younger. What do you think? I mean, obviously there's differences from like playing box and things like that, but what's like the most notable differences you see when you're talking or watching Canadians play versus Americans?
Well, it's funny. I think a lot of guys want to recruit Canadians based on how they play in the field. And I'm kind of the exact opposite. You know, having played in that league, the things that go undervalued, you know, are to me the most important things. I mean, watching a guy cut the middle hard and catch a ball and finish in box, I don't think people fully understand how hard that is. You know, the windows that you have and how small they are to score. The speed, the skill, the physicality, obviously the two-man game stuff, the sticks to the inside, you know, how quickly things transition from defense to offense and, you know, your ability to get the ball across the floor multiple times and how that, you know, and what that means to you guys and the way you pass and the way, you know, you hold your sticks. I mean, I want guys who play box well. You know, I don't need a Canadian that just can play out in the field, just stand inside and score. And, you know, for me, like, I've really kind of like fallen in love with like hockey players up there. You know, I think the hockey players bring a certain grit and toughness that, you know, really can't even be emulated on a lacrosse field. And when I find, you know, the Canadian guys that I like kind of all seem to have some sort of hockey background, they can, you know, be absolute savages on ground balls. Like I said, their play to the middle of the field and how hard they'll cut and, you know, how physical they'll be in their dodging and the windows that they need to shoot. It's all very similar. So, you know, I always laugh, like I'll leave, you know, to go up to major provincials every year, both in BC and in Ontario. And I'll be leaving from, you know, camp in Baltimore or Long Island or Philly. And there you've got like the parents kind of yelling at the coaches and the referees. And then you go to the major provincials and they're basically fighting with each other in the stands. They're yelling at their kids. You know, I'm like, oh, this is so refreshing, you know, to be back at a place where it's okay to yell at your kid and get on and make him feel like he's not doing what he needs to do rather than somebody else.
That's awesome. Maybe. So I guess we'll kind of work into High Point, kind of how did that come to fruition? Like, was this something that, you know, what was rumored to be happening for a while in the Division One program, like community, that the school was getting a program? And then did you set your sights on trying to take that job, or is this something that kind of happened pretty quickly?
No, I it was crazy. I mean, the whole thing kind of came about with a post, I think, on Inside Lacrosse. And, you know, I had been offered a couple opportunities before that to be a head coach in Division One, had turned some down, had, you know, been kind of one of the finalists for jobs and not gotten them. And I was looking, you know, I was looking for an opportunity to run my own program, and I never really thought about this kind of while going through, you know, my career at Calvert Hall and, you know, what I experienced at Ohio State. But I always loved like the building process of being at a place that, you know, was kind of boxed in. You can only be this here, and then proving people wrong and creating a vision and getting people to buy into that. And so, you know, I knew nothing about High Point. I kind of saw the post on Inside Lacrosse, stepped away from it, went back to work at Dartmouth. And then I got a call from a friend of mine, Bobby Muse, who was at the time the soccer coach at the University of Denver. And he goes, listen, man, my good friend is the athletic director at High Point. You should check this place out. It's pretty amazing. And he's now the head soccer coach at Wake Forest. And I said, really? I said, like, you know, are they doing it right? Are they going to support it? Do they want to win? Are they, you know, are they just kind of doing it for the fact that they want to boost male enrollment? And it's just, you know, a fleeting thought. And he said, no, they're doing it right. They do everything right there. And on a whim, I just said, you know, I'm going to check it out. So I called the athletic director and we ended up talking for like an hour and a half. At the time, it was a guy by the name of Craig Kylitz. And we just kind of hit it off. And it came down to myself and three other guys that are, two of which are still head coaches in Division One. One is now in high school. And they brought two of us to campus. And I was fortunate enough to be offered the position. I think I begged him for it like seven times when I was down here, because I remember getting on the plane back to Dartmouth, you know, and saying to my wife, man, if I don't get this thing, I'm going to be heartbroken, because I think it's a phenomenal school. I think we can recruit great players here. And I think we can win at the highest level. And, you know, the rest is history. But I was fortunate enough to get the job and accepted it without even knowing what the salary was. I was like, yes, I want to come. Let's go. I'll do this thing right now. I'll drive down. And it was this crazy year of, you know, being at Dartmouth, finishing up my commitment there, because we hadn't, you know, they haven't even had any players down here yet. And doing that while I was at the same time, could kind of driving back and forth and recruiting to High Point. It was a lot of fun. It was crazy. I don't know if I could do it, you know, at this stage, you know, coach two teams and recruit and, you know, meet with 30 people on a day. But at the time, it was just a dream to have a Division I program, you know, and be a head coach is something that I thought was pretty special.
I just want to ask coach on that, you know, subject. I was, you know, lucky to see a couple different college programs and play for different programs. I'm curious, like, at what point in the process of building a program did you decide, like, how do we want to actually play? Because I'm curious, like, I think some coaches, it's really central, and that's great because then you recruit to your system and stuff. And then some coaches can kind of, you know, change their systems depending on who the group they have at the time. So obviously you're focused on culture building and stuff, but where in the process do you decide, like, this is what we're actually going to play like?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. I've never actually been asked that. But, you know, when I was at the University of Denver, we kind of went through this whole just kind of how can we be the best in the world at certain things. And we introduced the box to our guys. You know, we taught our guys how to play box lacrosse. We had these two hockey rinks at Denver. We padded the guys up. We did, you know, tons of two-man game stuff, tons of indoor box drills. I mean, we really delved into this thing. And one of the coolest things about that was we felt like we could, you know, defensively there's principles you have to follow. There's certain things you can do. We wanted to be aggressive in certain situations, and we wanted to win our matchups on the ball and go by the old adage, like get to the middle of the field on offense, protect the middle of the field on defense. But offensively, we wanted to put, you know, a Canadian in the middle of the field at the University of Denver on offense and make people think twice about leaving him, you know, and putting these guys on the perimeter that were these great kind of speed dodgers, you know, that you see more in the American game. And then we had guys that were more the quick shifty sticks to the inside guys coming up from X and coming on the wings that would essentially have, you know, the perimeter open up because nobody wanted to leave the Canadian. And the second that you did, you know, you were gonna have to pay, because, you know, if you slid off the crease, you slid adjacent, somebody was filling, somebody was helping, and that guy was going to be the beneficiary of somebody getting the ball to him. So I think the cool thing to come full circle with that question was, because we were a program that didn't have any guys, you know, we ended up kind of recruiting to what we wanted to be and how we wanted to play. And I think if you look at High Point, we're not getting five-star guys, but we pride ourselves on being five-star developers. And we've had a lot of guys in this program, and I'm sure some of you guys have played with, I know you're playing with Asher, that are just, you know, phenomenal players who, you know, go through this system of development that we have and buy into things that we do, and they become these fantastic players because they care. But that was all, you know, the building thing was kind of first, who do we want to be? How do we want to play? Let's find guys that can kind of fit that mold. But That actually happened pretty early. And I think that was one of the benefits of not having to come to a place where there were already players here, you know, where you might not have been able to do that. Maybe you had to morph to something that you didn't want to do. But here, you know, we built it just like we built at Denver. And if you look at the Denver model, it's still incredibly effective. I mean, those guys won a national championship kind of doing that. So, yeah, it's a great question. Hopefully that answered it.
Yeah, no, for sure. I still watch or kind of follow some of Jamie's work and his podcast. He's got some really interesting ideas about lacrosse. If you're a lacrosse coach out there, you should check out Jamie Monroe's stuff. I believe it's JM3. He's the coach you're referencing at Denver. It's pretty interesting. It's just like good food for thought stuff, but just kind of curious how you know that stuff always goes down.
Yeah, Jamie, I mean, I'll tell you what I learned most working with Jamie. He is a master developer. You know, and I think it was the same thing when I was at Denver, you know, as to where I am now. We're not getting, you know, the best kid from Calvert Hall, the best kid from St. Anthony's, you know, the five-star guy that everybody's, you know, drooling all over in the summer. So what do? You know, you go to a place like Texas and you find a guy that's playing football who's going to be 50% of the version of what he's going to be after a fall, you know, playing lacrosse. You go to a place like Canada, you know, and you find guys up there that have ice in their veins and want to get better and are tough as you know what, and they just come in with this, like, you know, worker's mindset. You go to, you know, Columbus, Ohio, and you find a three-sport athlete who's 33% of the version of what he's going to be when he's playing lacrosse full year round. And I still take so much of what we did out there and apply it to what I'm doing here. And like I said, it's worked pretty well.
I think, you know, you kind of touched on it, and I guess for those that don't know, you know, the year before we actually played games, I guess our first year of games was 2013, right? But actually first on campus would have been 2012 when we came in for that fall. But the year before, when it was, I guess, still considered a club sport, you did recruiting for guys to come in, and go to the school and kind of, you know, practice like they were preparing to play for a season. How many guys was that again? I forget the kind of at the beginning.
It was like 19 guys. Yeah. And those poor guys, they definitely took a beating, man.
So that's part of, I mean, you said it, right? I think you alluded to it at the beginning. You said, you know, part of the idea of not really having upperclassmen to implement, you know, the culture was that you wanted to do that from the ground up. What inspired you to kind of, you know, we don't have to get into full details of what kind of everything those guys had to go through, but like, you know, what inspired you? Was it like kind of almost, it was almost like, from my perspective, like it was like a Navy SEAL approach, right? Like, it's like you kind of take things down to like the wood and rebuild it from there so that they can kind of spread your message. Like how did you kind of come up with this strategy and you know, what was it like, you know, seeing those guys develop throughout that year?
Well, it was basically designed to be like intentionally hard. You know, you wanted to find out who actually wanted to be there. You wanted to find out, you know, who was interested in all the right reasons. And those guys were held to such a high standard, again, with the intent that this thing was going to be sustainable. Like, I've never thought about coaching High Point to get another opportunity. You know, if that comes around, then I got to face that when it gets here. But I always wanted to build something that was sustainable. And I knew if we wanted to be sustainable here, we had to get to that player-driven culture where I could step away and allow our leaders to lead. And it really probably happened, you know, I would say 2 or 3 years into the program when, you know, all of a sudden the guys started to take control of the social, the academic, you know, helping guys out with school, all those different things, and making sure guys were doing the things right on the field. So, yeah, it was definitely by design. You know, it was borderline, are we going to be able to do this or not, you know, with, you know, our guys just going to leave when it gets really hard. But again, you know, we wanted to bring in great parents. We wanted to bring in parents that, you know, I would want to be a parent like, you know, and that were very like-minded thinkers. And, you know, we had a lot of like military guys, you know, from military families in those first couple of years. And I think when the kids called home, the mom and dad were like, you're not going, you're staying. And, thankfully for the parents, you know, they allowed us to do what we were doing. And again, it was them helping us that got us to where we wanted to be.
Yeah. I mean, and still, I mean, one, something on an image on there, get out of my mind, like all time guy, Sam Johnston was one of my, like, still one of my best friends now, like talking to him, and he was one of those year one guys. And you know, this is a guy that grew up in Texas. Like, all of his buddies are going to, like, the University of Texas. They're having a blast. They're doing whatever they want, right? And he's, like, again, was, like, a fundamental culture guy. But, like, you'd see him pacing the backyard just like, why am I doing this to myself? Like, I could be hanging out with my buddies at a big school and doing whatever I want, but I'm waking up at 4 a.m. to do these runs. But like you said, like, there was something in all the guys that went there. Like, there was some sort of part of us that was like, you loved that. Like, you loved being a part of something that was bigger than you, even on the days where you felt like you were maybe, you know, should have been in the mental hospital that your parents worked at. It was those times that kind of brought us together and built that culture up.
Well, I still love, like, the earned, not given, you know, kind of guys. And when you earn, I mean, you guys all know this. I'm talking to three world-class dudes on the line here. You know, when you do all the things you do to get to where you are, how you take care of your body, you know, what you put yourself through, the sacrifices you make that, you know, other people aren't doing, it just means so much more, you know. And for me, to see our guys do that every day, you know, academically, the commitments they make socially, and then what they do on the field, it just makes life such an easier transition when they leave this place.
I guess, like, kind of from that time, from those early years, you know, obviously, you know, when I got there, like, the first year we had, like, you know, the success on the field kind of came early. Like, I mean, you know, game one, where, you know, we lose a pretty close game to a Delaware team, and then, like, we win game two. Like, what's going through your mind when like that kind of happens, like, right out of the gate? Are you like, okay, like, this was awesome, but there's going to be struggles here? Or, like, what? Because, I mean, at the end, I think we went, what, like, 3-12 that year or something, I think. But there were some tough times, but, like, out of the gate, what are you thinking in your mind when we compete in game one and then win game two?
I've never considered myself a smart man, so I went into those games going, you know what, we're going to win every game on our schedule. And I think I had the backing of you guys behind me saying, we got this coach. And so, you know, we were believing we were good way before we were, and it probably was the reason why we did beat Towson in that second game. And I'll just never forget. I mean, I think everybody wanted to schedule us in year one. You know, everybody was like, yeah, well, we'd love to play you guys. We'd love to come to your place. And when we beat Towson in that second game and they were ranked 20th in the nation, all of a sudden a one-page scout on High Point turned into, let's watch film on these guys. Let's dissect these guys. Let's figure out a way to beat these guys. And, you know, playing with 34 of our 36 guys were freshmen. You know, none of us were quite ready for the wrath that we were about to take from some of those other teams. But just the vision, the belief of you guys and just all the guys I've had the opportunity to coach here, we've never changed. You know, we still schedule as hard as anybody in the country. We'll play anybody, anywhere, anytime. And, you know, hopefully my athletic director and our president continue to allow us to do that. They have for 14 years, but, it's awesome to be around a bunch of guys that don't see obstacles, that, you know, feel like they're just as good, if not better than anybody they're playing against, and come in with that chip every single day.
No doubt. I mean, and that's my next question. That's hilarious. But what goes into, because I've always wondered this, like, how does the whole planning process iron out when you're looking at a schedule and you're dealing with other coaches to plan that? Like, is that on the coach to make those calls and set things up, or how does that whole thing work?
Yeah, the only thing that's not on the coach is the conference schedule. You know, so we're fortunate enough to be in the Atlantic 10, which is a fantastic conference, and they will schedule our conference games. But everything out of conference is on us. Scrimmages, preseason scrimmages, fall scrimmages, events that we play in, and then all of our non-conference games. And it really is like, you know, when you're not good, scheduling's easy. When you're really good, scheduling's easy. But when you're one of these teams that kind of, like, you know, lurks in the bush, man, and nobody really knows, like, is this, you know, where are they going to be this year? It's probably one of the hardest jobs, one of the hardest things to do as a head coach. And for us, we're a little bit off the beaten path in terms of being in North Carolina, when most of the teams are kind of concentrated between, I'd say, like, Virginia to upstate New York. There's, you know, a lot of situations in Division I where you can travel, you know, 2 hours from your campus and play, you know, 5 to 10 teams. We don't have that luxury, you know, and the teams that we get to play like that We just added Queens, which is great, but you got Duke, Carolina, you know, and just a few that you can do that with. So, you know, you try to have good relationships with the teams you're playing geographically. You know, you try to find those teams on your schedule that are similar to yours. You know, for us, a lot of it is just people will put information out on this website and say, hey, we're looking for games on this date, and then you schedule the game with them. And, you know, you usually do a home and home if you're fortunate enough to do that. But, yeah, it's all on us.
That's so it's so interesting, too, because, I mean, from what pops into my mind right away is, like, I mean, obviously, I know your coaching style. I know I've seen other coaching styles, right, like where, you know, you're pretty into a game, like, and if a game gets chippy or something, like, you know, or and you're kind of going at it with, like, the other coach, like, do those things bleed over to trying to schedule that team again? Like, are those things that you have to consider?
Oh, my God, yes. Yes. not with most teams, but with the really good teams, always. I mean, yeah. It is, like, such a fine line you have to walk with, you know, the blue chip programs in Division I lacrosse. It's like, oh, you're going to talk back to me during the game, or you're going to, you know, have some words across the bench. Well, we just won't play you again, you know. And for us, we need those games. You know, those games give you the opportunity to, you know, a lot of times be on national TV. They give you a chance to, you know, potentially get a top 10 win. Those games can get you in the NCAA tournament. So, yeah, it is a fine line, and we've definitely had our fair share of we're not playing these again. Maybe because we won, or maybe because, you know, the head coach of the team was pissed off at a certain point in the game and probably did something he shouldn't have.
I don't know who that could have been. that's good. Well, and I think the other part of it too, right, is like those games really are a recruiting tool, right? It's like, you know, we played the Dukes, the UNCs, the Marylands. Like when you're going to see kids and talk to them, it's like, you know, you can come and play for us and play against those teams. And that's, I think for a lot of competitors, that's something that they want to do.
Yeah. Elite guys don't just want to be D1 players. They want to be D1 champions. You know, they want to be conference champions. They want to be national champions. And you know, when you start putting those guys on the schedule and you know you're going to be playing national TV games, or you're playing in front of 5,000 people, that's one of the greatest gifts you can give your guys, is the opportunity to allow them to play against the best of the best.
Maybe, I guess one thing I wanted to kind of ask you about, because obviously, you know, I've seen it from afar. You've seen it close up where this campus has just like transformed. Like, I mean, I think probably 40 of the buildings that are there now, like, weren't even there when I was, you know, when I started. Like, what's it been like to, you know, to get to know Nito Cubain, like the president of the school, and like see the development of High Point kind of unfold?
It's beyond words, honestly. I mean, it's just to grow with this place and to see our program grow with this place and to see athletics go to a whole nother level. It's beyond what I could have ever imagined when I first came down here. And it was beautiful when I first came down here. I mean, I came just a few months before you did, you know, and even then I was like, God, this campus is phenomenal, but it's gotten better since. The academics have gotten better. You know, the school's values have stayed the same. You know, they're attracting great kids, and they've really put a big emphasis on getting kids jobs, you know, post-graduation over the last couple of years. And that's been, you know, great for us to be able to send our guys into the workforce. And our guys are absolutely dominating. You know, we've got guys that are Navy SEALs. We've got guys that are fighter pilots. We've got guys working on Wall Street. We've got guys working for all these big box finance firm and Fortune 500 companies. We've had guys started their own companies. And I think what's cool about the school is it's got a very like entrepreneurial like kind of framework to it. And a lot of our guys will leave and go to, you know, a big box company. And then they'll go, you know what, I think I can do this on my own. And I love that, man. I love when our guys look for opportunity over security, especially when they're young. And it's cool to see those guys grow and just kick ass. But yeah, president's such an amazing guy. And so is our athletic director. It's like, I don't know how many guys can say that after a win or after a loss, you know, they get a text from the university president saying, hey, man, great job. Or, hey, don't hang your head. Like, you got a great thing going there. I'm truly blessed, you know, and I've never experienced that anywhere else that I was fortunate enough to coach at. And I don't know if I ever would, you know, it's a group of guys that has built this thing together and put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into this place over the last 14 years.
Coach, wanted to ask a question about Asher Nolting. Lucky enough to play with him, obviously, in the summer. you know, maybe one kind of more serious question and then one, you know, lighthearted question. But, you know, when you get a player like that who's so good and so unique, like, what are your coaching points with him? Like, lacrosse-wise, like, what are you telling him? Or is it just like, just go do it, just let it fly? Because obviously you don't want to be reckless, but, you know, he's a guy you don't want to put in a box either. What would you work with him on when he was at school?
Well, it was funny. Right before he got here, I kind of saw this story. It was on, you know, one of these ESPN 30 for 30s or something. It was about Mike Krzyzewski at Duke. And it was the year Bobby Hurley was coming in as a freshman there, you know, an all-American point guard, you know, one of the greats, you know, one of the great Duke basketball players of all time. And Mike Krzyzewski always had this thing where he was like, I'm never going to give the reins to a freshman. And he'd always say that to his guys. And the second Bobby Hurley walked in the door, he goes, it's your team, man. Like, take over. And I felt the same way with Asher. I mean, I had never coached a kid who had as much ability as he had as a Dodger coming up from X, with his size, with his quick feet, with his, you know, post-up moves, with his ability to finish and feed at the same rate, and his riding ability. I mean, he was exceptional and just a generational talent. And I looked at our staff and I said, we got to give this kid the ball. And we went from being this, you know, move the ball, you know, get six guys involved, offense, you know, everybody's got a touchdown each possession, to more of like what you see in the NBA right now when you have, you know, a high level, you know, player like, you know, what James Harden was a couple of years ago, what Kyrie Irving was. You want the ball in the hands of those guys for 70 to 80% of the possession, because you know the things that they have the ability to do are just beyond special. And so we kind of gave him the opportunity to run early. And by giving him the reins early, it allowed us to see kind of what we were going to be able to do and what we weren't going to be able to do. And there were games like where he would go off, you know, and nobody would have a game plan for him. And then there were games where people would scheme for him. And we ended up finding like there was going to be four or five or six schemes that people would do against them. So he would always have those in his back pocket. We'd always be ready to pull those out. But if people played him one-on-one and made it just about, you know, no scheme, just win your matchup. I mean, he was scoring 9-8 goals against ACC All-American level guys. So we really let him have the reins, and we kind of figured things out as we went. But yeah, he was awesome. And I think the thing that made him so special too is, one, he's like sports brain. I've never met anybody in my life who could tell you like who the MVP of the, you know, 2007 NBA Finals was, like, as quick as he could, or, you know, who led the NBA in scoring in 1983. It's like he's like, and he remembered everything we did. You know, it could be a one-off play that we ran one time, he would remember it 3 years later. You know, it was conversations we would have in the office about little wrinkles and things that he would want to try out, and we would go for it and it would work, you know. And he cared so much, and he loved lacrosse so much. And by being a big guy who could score but also get guys involved, he was well-loved by his teammates, as I know. You probably like seeing him on the field too, because I've seen you be the beneficiary of a lot of his. He's a fun guy to play with, because you always got to be ready with him.
Yeah, hey, I spent my college career with Teeter and Wisnowskis, and now Asher in the pros. So I'm just smart at getting myself around the right people here.
You should, man. I'll tell you what, that's a hell of a cast right there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny what you say, the sports brain. He knows every player in the country. You'll be talking about like some third string LSM from, you know, Cornell, and be like, oh yeah, he went to this high school, right? It's like, how do you know that? And why do you know that? Like,
it's unbelievable. Yeah. It's unbelievable. I've never met anybody with the power to be able to do that.
Yeah, he's a beauty.
Was that your lighthearted question too, Donnie?
I was just gonna ask if there's any like kind of funny stories that because he's just a goofball. But any kind of funny stories come to mind. Everything he does is just funnier because he's like, however tall he is, and like 230. So it's just funnier.
Well, one funny story I can think of is my one assistant, who Dan knows, Connor McKemmy, who's kind of gone out into the real world now, was like hyping me up as a low level NBA basketball player in our pickup games, on our 2-on-2 pickup games with our staff. And I don't know why he was doing it. I don't know if he like truly believed it or if he was just trying to get a raise or what. And he kept telling Asher, you got to see Coach play. You got to see Coach play. This guy could play in the league. And so Asher's like, oh, man. So he comes over one day and he sits in the stands, and he's just severely disappointed in the fact that I'm just this old guy that shoots threes and pushes people when they're about to hit layups. And he's like, "Coach, you suck, man. You're not a low level NBA guy. You couldn't even play Division III basketball." So
you humbled me.
I can sit here and do that. I can sit here and tell Dan Lomas and Asher Nolte stories all day, but I don't know if the fans want that.
I think we might. There might be something that get us canceled. We don't need that, so we can stay. We can stay away from. We'll stick to the Asher watching you play basketball stories. Those are better. Paul, yeah, you were asked.
I was just going to ask, how many calls did you field from Dan when Asher was getting up to his record to put him back on the bench and not give him the ball? Was the phone blowing off the hook or what?
I thought we were going to have a Tanya Harding case with the old crowbar, but yeah, he stayed home.
Oh man, that's I mean, I still won't.
It's not a bad place to be, man.
No, man. Still one of the all-time funny comments you've had. I don't know if you meant it like as mean as it sounded on the broadcast, like the way that they said it, but because it was when like Younger was getting like scoring a bunch of goals, right? And I think he got up like he had more than I had in a single season. And they had asked you about it, like, "Oh, like, how do you think about, you know, Chris Young approaching Dan Lomas's record?" And you're like, "I think the only person that cares about Dan Lomas's record is Dan Lomas." That was your response. And they said this on like a national broadcast. I remember getting videos of that from like a bunch of my buddies, and it was a humbling comment, to say the least.
I think every great player we've ever had, you got that little ticker sheet in your it's like the outfield scoreboard at Fenway. You just flip the number over the second the guy gets the next one. You're like, "Oh man, come on now."
Yeah, that's too good. What's so I mean, over your time, kind of obviously that we've had you for a bit here, we won't keep you much longer, but over your time at High Point, you know, kind of building a team from, you know, from the floor up really, and into a program that's, you know, competing with these blue chip schools that you talked about, what would you say would be kind of like a lesson or two that you've learned or something that surprised you about yourself throughout the process?
Oh, that's a great question, man. I think, you know, I've got to do a better job with my balance, you know, with, you know, making sure that, you know, now I've got a 15-year-old, a 13-year-old, and a 7-year-old and an amazing wife that, you know, I spent so much time away from them building this program. And I put so much effort into the development of the guys and, you know, being there for the guys and having 24/7 accessibility to me. That I think there's times where I just have to make sure that I'm taking care of myself and taking care of my family at the same rate that I'm taking care of the program. And I think, you know, early on, that balance was definitely off. You know, I was spending way too much time in the office, maybe unnecessary time. And I was, you know, worrying about things that were really outside of my control. But now it's gotten to the point where I've got great assistants. I've got players that I can trust, you know, unconditionally. And it's just gotten to the point where I can actually step away every now and again. And by stepping away as a head coach, sometimes you think of that as a negative thing, but it can really be a positive thing in allowing the guys to have ownership. And so that was one thing. And then the other thing was just, you know, I'm sure it was good and it was bad. You know, I wanted everything immediately. You know, I wanted every bit of success immediately. And, you know, I think it turned off some guys that were really, really good people and really, really good players. You know, I might have, you know, gone over the line with them a couple times. But at the same time, I hope, you know, there was a little part of it that actually made them go, "You know what, man, it's life is hard. I'm going to have to earn everything I get." But, you know, you learn. I mean, you live and you learn. And I think now that I have kids, you guys say it every time I see you at a wedding, I'm a big softy now. And, you know, I'm way too nice on the guys. But, you know, you have kids and you realize the struggles they go through, you know, in school and growing up and all these different things. And now I just want to make sure I'm treating every one of the guys, you know, like I do with my own kids. And not that I wasn't doing that. But, you know, I love the development of guys. I love seeing guys grow. I love seeing guys do things they never thought were possible. And this, you know, format of being a coach gives me the opportunity to do that and get on, you know, podcasts like this with three legends and all these wonderful things that you don't experience if you don't put yourself out there. So, yeah, a lot of things I would have changed. But at the same time, you know, I just I'm very fortunate to be where I am and lucky enough to work with a bunch of guys that I've had the opportunity to work with between staff, administrators, and players.
Beauty. Donnie, that was,
that was like the tearjerker part.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, you're not wrong. Like, you're getting in touch with the feels. That was tell that to the guy that was 2 inches from my face to asking me why I couldn't catch the ball one morning or something. But
why he can't dodge with his right hand? Why won't you go right?
that was nipped in the butt real early. Practice number one, we were doing like the box passing drill, and I caught it lefty. Went to throw righty. My stick fell out of my hands. He looked me in the eye and said, never do that again.
Listen, man, I would never ask a Canadian to play with his weak hand. That's mental.
It's almost sacrilegious in Canada.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, again, we appreciate your time. Paul, you're done. You got anything else you want to ask before we go?
No. Thanks, Coach. No, I appreciate your time.
Unreal way to end it, Coach. Really appreciate it. Great meeting you, and all the best in High Point. I've been a High Point fan since Dan came to Rochester, and I'll be a High Point fan now that meeting you. So I never got to go D1, but if I would have, it would have been High Point, I think.
Well, I wish you would have. I would have liked to have coached you. Listen, if you ever have any good Canadians up there, give me a call, all right?
I got a 2-year-old son, so class of 2035, I'll be giving you a call if you're still there.
Yeah, if I'm lucky enough to be. We'll see.
He's in, man.
Awesome.
Love it. Look at that. Well, again, appreciate everything you've done for me, and we'll be following along.
Appreciate everything you've done for me, man.
Oh, don't. All right.
What you guys don't understand is this. Let me cut you off. Like, okay, not only does the coach right here love Dan Lomas, but my grandmother, who passed away, greatest Dan Lomas fan of all time, and I think she was breaking NCAA violations his entire career here. I don't know what she was doing, but you know, whether it was cakes or cookies or whatever she was giving it, but she'd always say in her thick New York accent, she's like, "You gotta recruit more Canadians. You gotta get the Canadians. We need another Dan Lomas."
I still have that painting actually right up behind me in my house. That your grandmother painted a scene of a Canadian winter, and they ended up sending me that. But yeah, there was a couple of letters that showed up that were nicely worded. That's all. And
you were the original NIL guy, probably from grandma.
Yeah, yeah. Say the same thing. He was the original.
Torf's grandmother crafted the original NIL deal with, but didn't put it. No traceability on it, which was great. I think I ended up sending a jersey back or something, which was
yes, you did, man. Yeah, and yeah. I think when she passed away, it was still like hanging up in her closet. It was like the rafters.
That's awesome. Man.
So cool.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, again, appreciate it. It's crazy the amount of memories. Always great to catch up with you, and I'm already looking forward to next wedding season here, so that we can kind of get back to catching up as they come, because it's the best time to do it. But good luck this year, and we'll be watching from afar.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Awesome.
Thanks, Coach.
All right. That was Torp.
Is it Torp or Torpy?
Torpy.
That's his actual name?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. I didn't know if that was his nickname.
No. Torp. Nice. The Torpster.
The Torpedo.
Yeah, we didn't get into any good. He kind of ran through his own playing career pretty quick. But there's rumors when he was at Ohio State, like, and he was like a freshman, he would like go into the forest and cross-check trees to try to get better at cross-checking.
Just an animal. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's got the ability to snap. I've seen there was a couple funny times where I remember one of my good friends, Pat Farrell, who's like a close defenseman, kept trying to go like and do over the head checks. And one Torpy got so sick of it, stopped the drill, grabbed Pat's stick out of his hands and just threw it into the stands. And then we just called the practice. That was it. So it's there's some real good quality stuff we didn't get into, but some of those stories are probably better left untold. His grandmother also, that story is funny, man.
She was awesome.
I guess there's not a whole lot else going on. I mean, obviously watch the games. There's a bunch coming up this weekend. I know I'll be watching them. I think we got Friday, Saturdays. I don't even know, there might even be a Sunday, who knows.
But you got anything else before we just shut her down?
No, that's good, man. I just wanted to tell that escalator story. That was it.
I love it. Okay. Well, that's that pretty much that does it for us. Get out there, try your raspberry lemonade vodka. Give us some reviews on that stuff. And yeah, we'll talk to you guys for episode 106 next week.
Peace.